All right, guys. We're here at Flying Squirrel with Max Popple and Dan Rose, co-founders of this beautiful Southside restaurant. Thanks for having us here today, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for coming out.
So so give us a little bit about, like, what is Flying Squirrel? In your minds, what you're offering here to Chattanooga here on the Southside, what can people expect, and what is Flying Squirrel all about?
Sure. Flying Squirrel is your neighborhood bar and restaurant. We're really smitten with the concept of the third place. Your first place is your home. Second place is your work. Third place, this establishment where you go to, you know, talk to people and go and live life and just kind of enjoy and take things in. And so very intentionally don't have TVs around here. Got some pretty stuff to look at and just really force you to talk to the people you want to hang out with.
Very cool. Awesome. So how did that all get started? I know you guys have kind of been OGs of the restaurant scene here in Chattanooga before the wave that came with people like VaynerMedia and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. How did you guys get started? What brought this concept about for this awesome architecture, this place in the South Side, and that third place aspect?
I'll just say that I don't really think we are the OGs, okay. And now I'm going to force Dan to answer.
Yeah, that's fine. We were relatively early arrivers on this side of town.
Got it.
But there are definitely some restaurateurs, restaurant groups, the Terminal guys, the Monans, and plenty of other independent concepts that just have, you know, one restaurant to their name, like Easy Bistro. They've been around forever. So there wasn't a whole lot of restaurant activity down here on this side of town when we opened, especially not a proper late night bar. And especially not like a proper late night non-smoking bar with like an emphasis on just like it being not a dive, but just a really nice place to hang out. So, you know, we'll never know what would have happened if we hadn't opened the place, but it seemed like it helped to kickstart the nightlife scene down here. And Clyde's followed, and then Feed and Stir. And I mean, you know, we're covered up down here now. So Terminal, I mean, they were Terminal and Aaliyah.
Big time.
And Need Loves.
Right.
I mean, those were like those are the places that were down here a while before us.
So in doing so, and kind of bringing that late night non-smoking place where you could have cocktails as well as eat vibe to the South Side, how was that welcomed when you guys arrived here?
Very enthusiastically.
Really great.
Yeah, I mean, there was already an energy around this side of town.
Awesome.
And it was definitely on the upswing. I mean, there was a lot more vacant real estate and old buildings and empty lots. And it was grittier than it is today. But I think that people were just really excited about a new nightlife spot in a relatively sort of lesser known part of town that had this kind of air of like a new frontier to it. And so, yeah, I mean, when we opened up and the street construction out front, we were a full-on construction zone. The entire block in front of our building was torn up for the first 3 months we were open, and it did not stop people from coming. It was a total mob scene. For better or worse, it was a super young party crowd, and it wasn't what we had envisioned, per se, and it was just really, really wild. We've changed a lot since then. We've changed our policies. We've changed our hours. We've changed the stuff that we offer to drink. And we've had to kind of crack down on you know, people just acting crazy because we want our staff to have a good time. And it was never really supposed to be like a, you know, rager house party.
Yeah.
But the business, it's evolved in a lot of ways. I mean, from food and drink and the crowd and everything. We love everybody. And same as the hostel next door, it's like we really don't have a target market exactly. We just want people who are into what we're serving.
Awesome. And a little bit about that. I mean, you guys also co-founded the Crash Pad before Flying Squirrel came to be. How did that kind of lend itself to this making sense as maybe an extension of that experience or something new to Chattanooga as well?
Sure. So, you know, our original idea was to create this outdoor base camp and to be able to serve liquor to our guests at the end of the night.
Awesome.
To totally oversimplify what we were trying to do.
It's a great motive.
For a number of reasons, it didn't make sense, mostly in getting a liquor license, to have it all in one establishment. Over there, we didn't have the seating or the kitchen requirements to do it. So if we wanted to have that amenity, it necessarily had to grow into its own beast and right next door. So, you know, we keep them very distinct and separate, as even though they are sister businesses. They play off each other, but Crash Pad's definitely not a drunk tank for all the late night squirrel patrons here, as much as it seems like that would make sense.
Yeah.
That's awesome. One thing you mentioned, Dan, was kind of how that evolution has lent itself to kind of Flying Squirrel doing new things, acting in new ways, and kind of evolving in itself also. I think one thing that we've talked about that you guys are also focusing on more is that focus on being more than a bar here in Chattanooga in the South Side, seeing how that's evolved. How is Flying Squirrel kind of attacking that at this point? And what do you guys have to offer that's really kind of making sense to invite people in and experience that this is more than a bar?
Mm-hmm. So here's a complicated answer to a simple question. One thing that sort of helped us and hurt us is that when we opened there, you know, as we've said, there was relatively little restaurant and bar activity down here when we opened. And so we didn't have any constraints on the type of place we were going to be, the type of food we were going to serve, the type of drinks. I mean, we could have done anything. And that allowed us to really do what we wanted and what seemed right and what seemed like it was going to be fun and enjoyable without ever having to identify a concept beyond what Max said about the third place. But that isn't a restaurant concept, you know, that's like a your kind of state of being while you're here.
Right.
So that gave us freedom, and I feel like our food and drink programs reflect that freedom and the lack of constraints and the lack of saying, oh, this is a taco place or, you know, this is Italian or this is American food. We've borrowed from all different kinds of cuisines, and our drink program changes constantly. It's all over the place. I mean, the principles and the philosophies are the same through and through. We try to shop local and we serve stuff that we like. And you know, we, in all aspects of our businesses, we've brought in people who know way more about each niche of the business than Max and I do, because we're really relatively inexperienced operators of either of these kinds of businesses. So what we're seeing now is, I mean, I've heard word on the street, you know, from other restaurant people that Flying Squirrel sometimes seems like it doesn't know what it wants to be. It doesn't know if it wants to be a bar. It doesn't know if it wants to be a restaurant. We close earlier than we used to. We served food later. Then we served food earlier. And now we serve food later again. It's like, so we're just trying to do the right thing, and we're still not sure what it's going to look like in a few years. We appreciate the trend of increasing food sales, even kind of at the expense of like a little bit mellower of a late night crowd. And you know, so a corresponding sort of decline in the big picture of like, you know, late night alcohol sales and stuff like that. But it makes it a more fun place to work at when our business is a little more front loaded towards the dinner crowd. So we are evolving and trying to figure out who we are. And it's not because we're trying to be something. It's just because we're trying to make it fun to work in, fun to run, as uncomplicated as it could be. We're just trying to do what makes sense. But the external factors keep on changing.
Right. Would you say that this is more kind of a reflection of how Chattanooga's maybe evolved as well, in terms of the fabric maybe pointing more towards a demand for a drink and a dinner program than something that would be just...
I'd say that we're responding in part to the changes in the demographics downtown, but really we're also kind of just keeping our heads down in a way, because we've got so much to master still here, just in the operation and running a tight numbers game and figuring out how to market. And those things are happening sort of regardless of the way the city is changing, except for the fact that it keeps on getting busier.
Right. Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And to that point, I think, I mean, just to nod to what Flying Squirrel does offer, it's got fantastic local beer, fantastic cocktails derived from a lot of local players, and I think a lot of the local impacts here. And then your food, man, I think you've kind of nodded to this, Dan, is incredibly expansive. I love it because it's one place you can come and get, like, some bomb fried chicken, but you'd also get, like, a really great salad and then come here for, like, a date as well. What is kind of, in reaction to also the demand of what is here, what's kind of driving that continued exploration of beginning to like serve and articulate a very varied menu to your audience?
Sure. When we first opened up, we found some vintage menus from then, and it was a lot more concise. It was the plan, and we wanted to have all shareable plates and to kind of fit the atmosphere of a bar, but to be able to get some really tasty food and share with friends, back to that, you know, third place and interacting with people. But then, you know, we saw this food coming out. It's like, damn, that's really good. And we can expand, we can add more things. We can also, we still like the shareable interactive concept, but let's get some entree type stuff on there so that we can be more than a bar, you know, instead of the place to go to get a drink before you go to dinner, you can actually come here, get a drink and have dinner. So
that's great. For those in our audience who may have forgot we were doing a podcast,
Do you ever interview, bro?
Never, ever, ever. for those that may not have had the opportunity to come here and experience your menu, what are some of those items that are like bringing people back that you think are really kind of those staples, those winners that people are coming to Flying Squirrel for?
Sure. I mean, it's tough starting with the fried stuff, but some of that fried stuff's so good. Yeah, right? So our garlic fries are intoxicating, and that you got to check those out. Our fried chicken, we've got Bert, one of our guys who's been with us for, almost since we opened, and he's got, you know, legit old Southern Meemaw's recipe, and so we've got that on during our happy hour from 5 to 7. So you definitely got to check that out. I know I'm biased, but I think it's some of the best in town. And then, you know, Cuban tacos have been another hit since we've had them on there. And just, yeah, so again, mostly shareable options, but my current favorite dinner, we got a watermelon salad, and you add a little grilled salmon on that, lightly blackened. Yeah.
That's a good one. Good stuff. In terms of cocktails and stuff, too, I think that's a very interesting program that you have here, because you can get everything from a local beer to a Negroni to something very seasonal as well. Who's really driving that? And I think your bar staff is some of the best in town as well. How are you really driving that as well?
Sure. It's just it's having talented people back there and giving them the ability to, you know, do their job and help push. You know, Dan alluded to one of the things that we've been pretty good at is knowing our limits and what we don't know and then hiring for those specific things. Kalina, who was one of our original bartenders who had no experience, she got so psyched on it and learned everything, eventually became our bar manager and assistant GM, and she's really helped to just kind of push that through. But again, we like leaning on the staff and having some, you know, seasonal R&D days. We do think that everybody who's back here has the ability to make some amazing stuff and, you know, kind of coach and work with everybody, make sure the costing works, make sure it fits with the program that we've got going.
Right on. I think that's one thing that also is very pervasive in what you sense when you're at Flying Squirrel or a Crash Pad is there's a very strong family team element of your team, and it feels almost like a family. And if you know Dylan or any of the other guys at Crash Pad, you get the sense of like autonomy and leadership amongst those that are helping to manage these spaces. How do you two create that, if not to scale yourselves, but also to drive success in your businesses?
You just don't show up, don't do anything, and see what happens.
That's great.
Kind of along those lines. I mean, leadership, you set your expectations,
right?
And that's not just us barking what they should be. It should be a conversation. Like, let's sit down. Here's what we want to accomplish. Here's how we're going to do it. Now, we're going to give you all the tools you need to do the job. Then we're going to step out of the way, let you do you. You know, there are multiple ways to get the job done. And then just got to make sure that you recognize and reward performance.
That's awesome. Good stuff.
Something to add there. There's a line about the founder, owner, CEO of Southwest Airlines, that he was a fanatic exemplar of their company culture.
Awesome.
So he was walking the walk. Obviously, he's very present in their operation. Otherwise, nobody would notice how well or how poorly he's exemplifying their written or stated culture.
Right.
And so, first off, having the goal of a strong culture, and secondly, figuring out how you build that, and then thirdly, being in there to show people what it looks like. And so Max and I have been really present in both our businesses. We worked full-time at the front desk for the first year of the hostel before we started backfilling our shifts to get into the design over here in the bar. And then we were both, you know, hyper-present on the floor here during service for months. Max retreated a little bit into the dark shadows of the administrative side of things. I stayed in on full-time front of house management for most of the first 4 years, and it is really good for the morale of the team to see the ownership involved in getting their hands dirty. I mean, we used to mop the floor and count the cash drawers like right there every single night on closing down, and then, you know, the only weird thing there is that then it's hard to step away.
Right.
And especially when your staff tells you that they can feel it when you're not there as much. And to say nothing of the capability of the rest of our upper management here. I mean, everybody's got full faith in them on both sides of them. But, you know, we're just trying to find that work-life balance. We're family men now, too.
Of course.
Yeah, it's the work-life balance and then also the working on your business versus the working in your business.
Sure.
Zingerman's is a company that we love them and learned a lot from them. And they,
good stuff.
They were the first ones kind of distill, you know, it's like clarification of the intuitive. You think about it, it's like, yeah, okay, you can be either working in or on, or sometimes both your business, but depending on where your business is in its life cycle, you need to be doing one more than the other. So we started in there, we started learning it, especially because we had no idea what we were doing. Right. We had no experience. And then at some point you need to start stepping back and just making sure that you're working on the business as well as in.
That's awesome. So how might that, I mean, as you two as partners as well, play to each of your kind of advantages or strengths or desires as well? Because I think you two bring different but similar vibes, obviously a very collective vision to the table here. How do you guys play that?
Sure. I mean, I'd say I do everything and Dan doesn't really do shit.
That's what seems like, yeah.
Yeah. No, we have had very kind of different but complementary strengths. To us is another thing. I stole from the Zingermans. Ask those guys because they have two founding partners who are still partners 30 years later, 10 businesses later. Yeah. How'd you guys do that?
Yeah.
And so then it came down to sharing the same core values and sharing the same vision for where you're going. So, and those are, once we learned about those concepts, we went ahead and clarified ours. And, you know, we both believed in that, and so that's what keeps together. And we've got very different strengths. I'm, I guess, more well suited to kind of the back end admin, you know, managing and leading businesses and managers, and Dan was still up in the front lines and helping out there a lot more till beautiful baby Ridge came along there. So
I mean, to put it like the most simply, oversimplifying, Max is kind of like the brain of the operation and I'm more of the heart, I guess. I'm checking in on everybody, making sure they're feeling okay, and Max is making sure that the business doesn't tank.
You're the cold-hearted bastard, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I have learned a lot about trying to balance the needs of the business, which I'd never really thought about ever. I really came into this with a useful amount of sort of like baggage of all the things that I didn't like from working in various different restaurants on the front line. Mm-hmm. And that really steered how I wanted this place to run, how I thought we should treat our staff. And we're on the same page there. Max isn't as cold as he seems, you know?
Yeah. It's got a heart. That's great. So in terms of Flying Squirrel, you two's adventures, et cetera, what can we expect? What's next, either this summer, kind of moving forward into next year for Flying Squirrel and Y'all?
What it looks like in here?
Yeah.
For that amount of time?
Yeah.
It will look much the same on the outside as it has the whole time.
Got it.
Food program's going to keep on changing seasonally. Cool. Drink program's going to keep on rotating. We will do our best to keep our staff turnover as low as possible. Internally, we're just working on running a tighter business, making it easier and more fun for everybody, and helping our management staff become more autonomous, really by bringing in or promoting more and more people into positions of management and leadership. That's been the biggest fluctuation for us that causes the most scrambling to recover our staff changes and gaps in leadership in various parts of the company. So, right. I mean, Max and I are on the same page here. The people are really everything. It's like you can have everything else going for you, but if you don't have a cohesive staff with the leaders in the right places, then it really doesn't matter how good the place looks, doesn't matter what the food tastes like.
Right.
And honestly, I mean, the product isn't going to be as good. Mm-hmm. So we are just trying to tighten it all up. So that's our plan here. I mean, we thought 2 years ago that we would be poised to open up another concept, and then we were slowed down a bit by stuff outside of here, you know, having kids. But really, it's like the deeper that we look at this place, the more we realize that there's just kind of endless room for improvement.
That's awesome.
In the operation.
Very cool.
So Dan touched on this. If you need a nugget for your listeners today, listeners, know your numbers, and not just what your numbers are, but what kind of the industry benchmarks are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had a vague idea, but we weren't doing everything right to know where we actually stood until about like 3 years into the business when we heard of this weird thing called a P&L statement.
Oh yeah.
And then figured out what kind of, you know, our prime costs should be and where they should be. And then, you know, we'd been doing inventory, but weren't necessarily using that in a timely manner to figure out what our actual costs were to be able to run that end. So, you know, we were going down the road of like, oh, you know, we've done this, we're open, you know, it looks great, we're the classic entrepreneurs managing from the bank account, we're paying all of our bills.
Yeah.
But then you learn about this P&L that's got like a zero at the bottom.
Yeah.
And you're thinking of expanding, but you're like, well, maybe we need to back up and figure out how to run one restaurant before we worry about something else.
Yeah.
So it's kind of where we were a few years ago. And you know, another shout out to the restaurateurs who came before us here. They've been great open books and have taught us everything. Any question we have, they are so friendly and helpful. So it's not like a fierce competition. Right. Everybody's just psyched to be here and help everyone and make it better for everybody else. So yeah, know your numbers from the start. That would have been useful.
I think that's an incredible story, especially in regards to the flexibility or the at-bats that a place like Chattanooga may give entrepreneurs, as well as that culture that helps you guys find like-minded people that are trying to raise the South Side, do similar things, but do it together. Like, nobody wants to see Flying Squirrel crap out. They want to see everything rise out. And I'm glad that we're all seeing that happen. Cool. We have a real zinger for you now. This is a real brain buster of a question. For you both, Max, you're going to start. Being that you're a restaurant and you're obviously in the culinary trade, imagine your hand. This is a question we ask everybody. Is
condiment question?
Yep. Is it? Yeah, we've actually done this together before. Good. We'll start with you, Dan. Max hates this question.
So the restaurant is my hand?
The condiment dispenser is your hand. And you have 5 condiments for life, and you choose which digit these condiments come from for the rest of your life.
Okay. In no particular order of importance? In
whatever order seems rational for your own condiment dispensing.
Okay. I'll have kimchi coming out of my thumb just because it's good, and it's chunky too, so the bigger digit would kind of help things flow through there. Beer is a condiment for sure.
That's a new one. We haven't heard that one.
So I would go ahead and probably... Well, I don't need to get more specific than that for fear of leaving anybody out. Our house made hot sauce coming out of that middle finger.
Yeah, for all the right reasons.
Yeah, it's zingy. Ring finger, hollandaise, the language of love.
Hollandaise does not get any love anymore. It's one of the core sauces.
Yeah, and out of the pinky, smallest, but it tries really hard. Strawberry jelly. House made, of course, yeah.
Good choice.
All right.
Your turn, Max.
How do I follow that? Your poor wife, kimchi and beer, that's not good for her. I can't help the mix. I don't mean the eating, I meant the whatever. All right, I'm going to start with ketchup because I'm that kind of guy. Hate it or love it, I love it.
Any specific ketchup or are you just
Heinz kind of man?
Yeah, good.
I can taste the difference.
I can too.
All right. It's ketchup snobs over here.
Good.
All right, next one, gochujang. It's a Korean.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the staple of Korean barbecue
it's
flavor.
Popular in America.
And it's like sriracha, but better. You're going to have this and you're going to never want sriracha again because it adds in the, like, it's got the spice, but it's got the sweet, savory, the umami, if you will.
So there's Whole Foods has these gochujang chips. Yeah, you know?
Stock up. And we've got our Korean barbecue breakfast burrito here on Sunday that's based in that sauce.
Awesome.
So you got to come check it out. Somehow one of the best burrito in Tennessee, which... I don't know. It's great, but I'm sure there's a lot of other great contenders out there.
You guys won.
I know. Where am I going? I did my hot sauce. You know, I'll throw in a Cholula for a hot sauce.
Good choice.
And then got to have a barbecue. Not really sure whose, but I like some barbecue sauce. Actually, you know what? Bone-sucking sauce. Sounds like I'm making it up. No, I can't find it around here, but that stuff.
Yeah, I've had that.
It was real good.
Good stuff. Love it. Anything you want to leave our audience with, aside from a nice welcome to Flying Squirrel?
No.
Come to Flying Squirrel. Enjoy it in the south side of Chattanooga. What's up, Dan?
We're 21 and up, except for brunch. So sorry. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends, but not your young ones.
So hi, I'm Brian, an account executive here at VaynerMedia, and I'm here with Danimal.
What's up?
So cool. Let's just jump on into this thing. For people that don't know you, like, what's your origin story? Who taught you how to play guitar?
I was kind of self-taught. Then I fell in love with music at probably about when I was 6 years old. I did these weird little keyboard. I took this keyboard class, and this was in Atlanta, and the teacher was really cool. We had Nintendo was, you know, all the rave.
I had one of those.
We would take like Mario Brothers and Zelda, and we would use our little Casio keyboards and make music to it. It was kind of a kid's class, but it was really cool. And it was like, now looking back on it, it was sort of production, like, you know, training me for production and stuff like that. But anyway, that was not really it was kind of a lesson, but not really. And I took a little piano, but then self-taught on guitar, and then I knew I wanted to do music, you know, from as long as I could remember. And so I wanted to go to a music college, and I wanted to go to Belmont, and I took lessons with Sean Perkinson, who was the guitar player for Kings of the Killer Fish back in the day. I don't know if you know that band, but nope. You know Yachty Westfield, drummer? He's amazing. He plays Feed on Friday nights, I think. He's one of the best drummers. He's fantastic. I'm trying not to cuss. But he's really awesome. And he was actually in the band, you know, and they were like my favorite band in high school, and they just so happened to be local. And I was like taking guitar lessons from my hero, you know, mm-hmm. which was really sweet. And he got me ready to go to music school. And then I got into music school and realized that, I don't know. The whole music school thing was not necessarily for me. I had different ideas of what it was going to be. It was great, and I learned a lot. And then I, you know, as soon as I got out of college, it was like, oh my gosh, I wish I had just started playing music.
Yeah.
Not to say go to college, kids, but but I mean, yeah, not so. Really. Like I would have liked. I wish I could have started earlier, because most of my knowledge was came from loop pedals. Really, to be honest with you, and being able to loop my own music and work with it and stuff like that. That was a very detailed answer. Sorry.
No, that's great. I mean, yeah, as someone who, you know, just finished up grad school last year,
yeah,
I definitely kind of wish there'd been like more people pushing. Maybe like for time in between high school and college, mm-hmm. to like really start diving into those interests.
And yeah, and then figure it out, and then maybe
go to college or
yeah,
or go in a more in the right direction instead of
taking a year off after high school might be a good thing to do. I don't know.
I don't want to put the wrong thing out there,
but you know,
I mean, all those musicians that are already halfway out the door, anyways.
Yeah, you know, and I'm 37 now, and it's like I'd give anything for 5 years.
That's cool. So here in Chattanooga, have you like been in here, like been in Chattanooga your whole life?
Well,
like,
what's
that story?
My family moved here in '89, I was here, you know, all through high school. When I went to Belmont, I lived in Nashville for about 7 years, and then joined a Chattanooga band when I was pretty much 2 years out of college. I joined a Chattanooga band called Up with the Joneses. One of the drummers that I had a band called Riverboat John in high school, and it was the same drummer that was in that band, and mm-hmm. he had me come along. I just started playing bass, and they needed a bass player. Actually, their bass player passed away a year before, and they were doing like a tribute show for him, so they hired me to be the bass player for that. And that started my career as a bass player. And I eventually ended up being that, and a couple other reasons ended up being why I moved back to Chattanooga. And I was real weird about it at first, but it's the greatest thing I ever did. Honestly, this town has been nothing but fantastic to me as a musician and an artist. Anyway.
Well then cool. So that kind of, you know, segues into something else I want to talk about is like, what's kept you in Chattanooga as you've, you know, gotten more successful and.
Well, interesting way to look at Chattanooga. I worked with this guy as a band called Woodford Sessions, and he was sort of an interesting songwriter, Michael Galloway, and he lived up in Nashville with me, and then I convinced him to move to Chattanooga, mm-hmm. and he was like, man, it's like, you know, the poppy fields and Wizard of Oz, you know, like you know, like kind of like you just get everything, you know, you just want to stay there, you know, because yeah. it's such a nurturing, comfy environment, mm-hmm. you know. And that's like, I mean, except, you know, that was sort of a negative point of view. But for me, it's been sort of a different thing. Like, I've been able to live off music here.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I haven't had a day job in, you know, 5 years, which is so wonderful. You know,
yeah.
I've been doing restaurant gigs and, you know, the art gigs and the rock gigs, you know, sometimes they make good money, but the restaurant gigs, the restaurant industry has really kind of kept me moving in the city. And, it's been great. I mean, I've been received very well and been taken care of very well by everywhere I've played. So that's awesome. And it's also sort of a creative environment too. That's another thing. Coming from Nashville, not knocking on Nashville, but and Nashville's got a lot of cool things to offer, you know. But everybody knows about that, you know.
Yeah.
But there ends up. I noticed a sort of a trend with a lot of my friends in Nashville is that you this brilliant songwriter, brilliant artist would, you know, you just be like, oh my gosh, they're amazing, and then some, you know, mediocre, good looking, you know, songwriter that. You know, has label backing and stuff like mm-hmm. that, you know, scoops him up and he's like, oh, okay. And then they, you know, and then they go off and do stuff that's very uninspired, you know, and usually ends up not working out. I don't know, you know, sometimes it does for him or whatever, but the creativity kind of gets smashed a little bit. And being in Chattanooga, I am able to be creative as creative as I want to be. And, you know, I mean, there's things I got to do like at the restaurant gigs, you know, in order to keep people interested, covers and stuff like that. But nobody's ever told me to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I've just kind of tried to, you know, get feedback from the audience and find out things that they like. And, you know, we end up liking the same thing. So I'm never really doing anything that I'm like ashamed of doing.
Yeah, yeah. So instead of like established things making you kind of go into the box if you want to play at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Because it's in Chattanooga, it's like a whole different thing. You get to go in and do your thing. And
do my thing.
If people don't like it, they leave. But yeah. As long as enough people keep showing up to eat food.
Exactly. As long as I can sell my pay and beer, then it's usually ends up being worth me being there. Yeah. So that's my goal at every restaurant gig at the very least.
That's awesome. So what are your favorite places to play in Chattanooga?
It depends on... If you mean in the restaurant world, the backstage bar and Feed are my two favorite places that are regular gigs, where I'm able to really do everything I want to do on those. And I have a great, wonderful group of people that come out to most of those shows. And they really engage with me and enjoy everything, and we just have a great time. And so those are my two favorite because that's where they all like to come.
Yeah.
And I also get treated very well by both of those venues. Every place I play, I get treated really well. I've never been treated poorly in town. But those are the two on the regular. Now, as far as like, you know, bringing a rock band, bringing like Danimal Planet, that's sort of my, the music that I write. That's the band basically. And, favorite place for us, I mean, JJ's has always been such a great place to play. It's just raw energy, you know, and
there's like tight quarters.
Yeah, it's just
like intimate.
Yeah, it's you know, you can you know, be super mellow there. Or you can rock out. I mean, back in the you can get pretty crazy there. Yeah. You can take it to a lot of good levels,
just a little bit,
and it's that rawness, it's that basement. You know, I'm rocking out like in high school with my friends, you know, and we're just, you know, doing our thing. And there's no, you know, the sound system's really minimal, which a lot of people complain about, but I think it's nice because it brings out the rawness in the musicians, and I always end up having really good shows there. And having really good audiences there, you know, and they're you know, Songbirds, which was the Revelry Room, the lower Songbirds is a good venue now. Really like that. But yeah, those are my venues that I like.
Cool. So I assume the same venues that you like to go listen to when you're not actually playing.
Pretty much. If I'm, which doesn't happen a lot, unfortunately. I wish I could say that I was better about doing that, but I gotta save my ears a little bit sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
You know, trashing them with loud music all the time is tough on it. But I try to make it out as much as possible. And if I am gonna make it out, it's usually gonna be like a JJ show or something like that. So
it's also a good thing for you to be a little busy and not be able to just go to shows all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be going to many more if I wasn't playing so much. I can do that. So
cool. Who's like your biggest inspiration as you've continued to play? You know, you were talking about some of those guys when you were in high school, but you just said you're 37. What's been keeping you kicking?
Like artists, like famous artists anybody?
Famous
really.
Artist? Is your mom your inspiration?
Well, my parents were both fantastic, wonderful people, and they always supported my music. So yeah, I owe a lot to them. But on a like artistic level, you know, I as a frontman, Wayne Cohen for the Flaming Lips is somebody that I really, really look up to. I would, if I could get into that, not do exactly what he's doing, but like do stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, like your version
he's
of that.
Just, yeah, he's just, I mean, he got the visuals. He's got, he just really is, he's one of my favorite frontmen out there. So he's been an inspiration lyrically. And Alan Watts is not a musician. He's a philosopher and he's not alive today, but he has definitely been a huge influence on my lyrics. And so, yeah, so those two people I think have probably changed who I am as a musician more than anybody.
Best I can to go look that guy up.
Yeah, Alan, oh my gosh, there's all kinds of cool stuff. There's a bunch of YouTube
videos. I'm sure there's plenty of YouTube videos.
He's got this like Disney storytelling British voice, and
yeah,
it's nice to listen to, but he's brilliant though. Very, very awesome.
Cool. What would you have done differently? So, you know, you had mentioned maybe not gone to college or even better, like what kind of advice do you have to some young artists starting out that are, you know, looking up to you and wanting to do what you're doing?
It's just, that's a loaded question. I could talk for days about that. It's hard to even pick anything to talk about there. Just to get started as early. And actually, you know what? No, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say, get out of your head. Learn what the ego is as an artist, as a musician, and use it as a tool and not an identity to who you are. And I think if you can do that as an artist, then you got it. It's not about and there's an element of ego you do have to have. You can't just shove it away. This is some Alan Watts talking, by the way. So
I'm gonna go sit with this later.
Yeah. But really, that just really understanding the nature of what the ego is, because it can destroy you. You know, I've had, you know, so many times where you're just like jealous of other bands, or you know, mm-hmm. just always comparing yourself, and it's not a bad thing to do, but there's a healthy way to do it. You know what I mean? And I think you can really crush yourself and just allow yourself to go into a lot of dark places if you don't understand the nature of what the ego is. And you'll never fully understand it, you know, but just to attempt to understand it is a very, very necessary thing as an artist, a musician, or a writer, or anybody in the arts. So,
wow, that was a great answer. To go to on a lighter note, we ask this question to everybody that we have come to the office, come on the podcast. So you've got 5 condiments for the rest of your life. You can get up. I'm gonna need you to pick here on the spot, and you got to pick which finger they come out of.
Okay.
So just you just go as you're ready.
5 condiments.
Yeah, 5 condiments. you don't get any more for the rest of your life. You only get to use those 5.
Okay. All right.
The definition is as loose or as like narrow as you want it to be.
Okay. Like ketchup and like,
I mean,
ranch,
yeah, so,
and stuff.
So
like
that's
that.
You know, that's like a super narrow definition.
Okay.
Shout out to Video Guy over here and his steak bits that come out of one of his fingers.
Steak bits. Ooh. Would cashews be considered?
Yeah, great.
Okay. All right. So definitely. And this is related to my diet right now. But I'd say apple cider vinegar out of my pointer finger. White balsamic vinaigrette. I like vinegars. Don't smell my breath. And cashews out of my ring finger. And let's see.
The pinky and the thumb.
Pinky and the thumb. Let's see. Soy sauce out of the thumb. And then barbecue sauce out of the pinky. Got to leave barbecue sauce in. Is there something deep?
No, there's nothing. We just, so like, and the next step is that we like write them all down and we laminate them.
Oh, nice.
We still haven't hung them up in the office. We've got a hefty little stack of all the different people that we need to get like,
that's
hung
awesome.
Up on the wall.
I can't wait to
just
see
our,
that.
Our fun little thing.
Can't wait to see that. That's my diet right there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I think we're about to check out your songs next. So you want to kind of let us know like what you played for us?
Oh, yeah. The first one was Counterclockwise. And that's one of the, I think it was the first or second song that I ever wrote, and that's actually when I was getting into like Alan Watts and Ram Dass is another person that I read a lot of, that's a philosopher, and you know, that song is all about just, it's just staying in the moment. You know, it's just a simple, just nothing. I'm not trying to trick you with any clever words or anything like that. And it's just about being right here, right now, you know, and not worrying about anything else. The other one, I Crossed the Ocean, was sort of after a relationship that I wouldn't say it was a bad relationship, but it was very trying, and I lost a lot of who I was, but I ended up finding it through that. But while in it, I didn't.
Yeah, it was a lot.
I lost who I was, you know, until I got out of it. Then I realized, you know, a lot about myself. And so it's a, you know, it's about just the weight of that kind of a relationship. You know, every song that I write, I don't, it's not very super specific. It's kind of, I like to have general themes. I don't really like to have very tricky lyrics, or, you know, I don't want to seem smart. I just want to pack a punch.
There.
And I want it to be sort of universal. So each song you can read into it, you know, how you want to read into it. I'm not a storyteller songwriter. I just like putting another thing that's very kind of similar, and by Wayne Cohen, you know, from the Flaming Lips.
Putting stuff out there.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
I appreciate it.
I think we're going to enjoy some of your tunes now.
All right.
Clocks are tucked underneath your bed. Are you having a good time? If you can only think of now, will you show me how? So I can have a good time. I'm running circles counterclockwise. Or running faster than the speed of time. When you're stuck outside with the metal in your side, you're closer to a good time. But when sustained somehow in the now and the margins off your brow, then you're having a good time. Clockwise, oh, running faster than the speed of time. Oh. Oh, I'm running circles counterclockwise. Oh, running faster. Oh, than the speed of time. Sitting by your side, and all I need is time. Oh, now I'm sitting by your side, and all I need is time. Ooh. Tribute.